The Orange FM.
Welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins. I'm here with the man who prefers his chicken boneless, Adam Farmer.
Oh, goodness. I don't even know what to say to that.
I should warn you about these.
Not at all. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one at all.
So, we're back recording Bad Wolf Radio, and any good news out there?
let me try to recover. Okay. Kind of like the past couple weeks, not a lot of news coming out there. I posted something on the Facebook page this week about a new Doctor Who coding game that's been put out there by the BBC. Pretty awesome. Outside of that, though, a few things that have cropped up. Number one, what would you say if I told you you could watch one of the last two episodes of this season early? Would you be excited?
Yeah, I'd watch it early.
Well, too bad. Because they are showing it early. They're showing it November 7th is when it's going to be, or November 4th at 7 p.m. It's going to be showing early, but it's only showing in Cardiff. So if we have any listeners across the pond, you do have the option to see Death in Heaven early, one of the final two episodes of this season. Tickets are only £12 and then £8 for concessions. So if you're interested, but they're also doing a lot of other showings. And it sounds like it's going to be a pretty big event where they're going to have people who are involved in the filming at each one of the different showings. So they're doing Death in Heaven on the 4th of November, then The Doctor, The Widow, and The Wardrobe, everybody's favorite Christmas special, right? and then the Santarin Stratagem and Poison Sky, The Unquiet Dead, and The Doctor Who Mask of Mandragora and The Prisoner, and then Five Doctors, all throughout different dates, all the way up to January 27th. But wouldn't you know it, none of them are over here.
Well, I guess we get some pretty cool stuff over here. We get, like, the screenings and all that stuff, so.
Yeah, we get all the stuff that they do everywhere else.
And, I mean, Doctor Who is definitely, you know, it's a British show, so we can't be too upset about the fact that they're getting, you know, this early view of this episode before America does.
But it would be pretty stinking awesome to see that episode come November 4th. But outside of that, there was another article that popped up that was titled 12 Doctors, 12 Stories, 12 Jackets, a Doctor Who style celebration. It sounds like they are different writers are putting together short little paperbacks of different stories, including different doctors. So 12 new stories, 12 new jackets. It sounds pretty cool.
Is this like an official thing, or is it like fan fiction?
No, authors including Neil Gaiman, Mallory Blackman, Charlie Higson, and now Holly Black have written stories to celebrate each doctor in Doctor Who in 12 Doctors, 12 Stories, which is being published tomorrow, which I believe this hit yesterday. So it was actually published today. The gallery celebrates.
That was some confusing timey-wimey stuff you just said. So it's coming out tomorrow, the 24th?
No, yeah, sorry. So okay. The article says it was coming out tomorrow. The article was published the 22nd, and we're recording on the 23rd. So it published today.
Today as of the 23rd.
Yes.
Okay.
Today, as of the 23rd.
Got it. So if you're listening to this podcast, it was published yesterday.
Right.
Got it.
Yes. Depending on when this podcast publishes. But
if any podcast is going to be confusing about time, it should be a Doctor Who podcast.
Exactly, right?
But makes I'm sense. Looking at the article right now. It looks like, are these the covers that I'm looking at?
Yeah.
Those are awesome. The covers.
I know, right?
So it's like very like flat style. What would you call that?
Yeah, it's
there's a word for it.
Mondo posters. It's in that similar style.
Okay. Yeah, these are so it's basically like a view of each doctor's outfit kind of from the neck down to about the waist and just like a paperback size look of their costume, but in a very flat artistic style.
Yeah.
Very
but
cool.
12 short stories written by different people.
Yeah.
It would be pretty cool to have just a 12 book set.
Yeah, I think I might definitely have to get this or at least put it on my Christmas wish list.
There you go. The only other thing that kind of hit that caught my eye was an article on whether Gareth Roberts could be the next showrunner. And just to kind of who Gareth Roberts is, his most recent episode was The Caretaker. So gut reaction, based on that episode alone, how would you feel with Gareth Roberts becoming the showrunner for Doctor Who?
I don't think I can just base it on that one episode. What are some other episodes that he's done?
He did
Shakespeare Code, right?
He did the Shakespeare Code, yep.
Okay,
he did
so
The Revenge
that's a positive.
Of the Slitheen, The Unicorn and the Wasp,
mm-hmm.
Closing Time.
So he did the Craig episodes.
The Lodger.
Okay.
The Empty Planet. Planet of the Dead.
I mean, based on his resume, he's definitely got some that I like. He doesn't have any standout episodes, in my opinion. Kind of like Stephen Moffat, you know, before he became showrunner, he had a couple, you know, under his belt that were standout, like Blink, you know, was kind of one of the fan favorites. And I don't know. I mean, he probably would be just fine as a showrunner. It's nothing that I'm like extremely excited about the idea of it, but you know, he's got some solid episodes under his belt.
Yeah. I would say the most recent episode, The Caretaker, would have me somewhat frightened just because it wasn't and even thinking back to the Lodger episodes, his take on the villain has always been, well, even The Unicorn and the Wasp, he's always kind of struggled with the take of on the villain. That being said, The Shakespeare Code, that was a really solid episode. But it would be fun just to see kind of the direction that he would take the show moving forward. I don't know how it meshes with the 12th Doctor or with Capaldi, though.
So is this just like a rumor? Is there anything?
It's all rumor. It's all rumor. There's an entire article. Which maybe I'll go ahead and post it on our Facebook page, but there's an entire article just of why it could be happening. But nothing more than speculation.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. I mean, I'm not ready to say that I'm, you know, done with Moffat. I think he's still got some good storytelling in him. So hopefully he sticks around for, you know, at least another season after this one.
Yeah, I agree. I know that I was singing a different tune leading up to this season. But yeah, I feel like he's totally redeemed himself.
We're like 9 episodes into the season already, which is crazy. Like,
the season's almost over.
It's crazy to think about. We were just talking about how much we missed Doctor Who, and we were doing all the classic reviews and kind of getting tired of all the stuff from the 60s and getting a little tired of Ian Chesterton, and now it's like the season's almost over.
Yeah.
Like, where did all the time go?
Yeah,
but
wrapped up in hours here and there talking about Doctor Who.
So, I mean, so far the season that, you know, we've gotten so far, 9 episodes in, including the one that we just watched, Flatline, how are you feeling about this season? You think it's a success so far?
That is a great question. It's something that I was thinking about today. I wanted to take the first season, well, Eccleston only had one season, but I wanted to take his one season, the first season of Tenet, the first season of Smith, and then this season with Capaldi, and line them all up side by side and go through the episodes and figure out, in my opinion, which Doctor had the strongest first season. Because right now, if you were to ask me right now, I would say that this first season for Capaldi is a very strong contender for being, in my opinion, one of the best first seasons of the new Doctors. That being said, I still need to go back and look through it. Some of the episodes for Eccleston, slight disadvantage just because of kind of the production value of those episodes, kind of detracted from the story, although the story was extremely strong. That's what sucked me into Doctor Who in the first place. I would say other than two episodes that were weaker, this series has been really, really good.
I'm not as ready to say that the season's been a success as you are, it sounds like. I think I'm more 50-50 on the episodes that we've gotten so far. There's been a couple that I thought were really great. There's been a handful of good ones, and there's been a decent amount of bad ones, in my opinion. So, I mean, when I say, I guess, bad, maybe not bad, but just they didn't live up to my expectations after, you know, kind of the early part of the season that I was really amped up about, and then it kind of just fell off for a few episodes there.
So we did have some pretty high expectations after the first three episodes.
I think it was the three episode run, Time Heist, The Caretaker, and Kill the Moon, that really, I mean, Time Heist was starting to kind of go downhill, then The Caretaker I really didn't like. Kill the Moon, you know, I ripped that one apart in our review. So, and it's slowly climbing back up. Mummy on the Orient Express was better and flatlined. You know, we'll talk about it, but you know, I haven't been blown away since the fourth episode.
See, I would take Time Heist out of the mix of those episodes that started to feel like a dip. I thought Time Heist was going to be a dip, but to me, it still felt very strong. Now, Caretaker, that's where Caretaker and Kill the Moon both had strong story elements to them that I enjoyed. But there were a lot of just moments that kind of left you shaking your head and kind of robbed the magic from the episode for me. But yeah, I feel the same, that the Mummy on the Orient Express definitely started to pick things up again. And then, like you said, we'll talk about Flatline as an intro to that discussion.
Yeah. So if you were wondering what the heck my reference was in the beginning when I said something about boneless chicken.
it had 50% to do with the episode and 50% to do with who knows what.
When I hear the term boneless, that's just the first thing I think of, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so we have an episode here and, you know, the reference to boneless is the reference to the villains of this episode, which we don't really find out that that's what the Doctor is going to call them until the very end of the episode. Well, let's talk about it. Flatline, Series 8, Episode 9, writer Jamie Matheson, director Douglas McKinnon. These are some names that keep popping up.
Yeah, so this is the second episode by Jamie Matheson. His first was Mummy on the Orient Express. So the first episode of this series. Pretty interesting that they put them back to back. I watched some of the Doctor Who extras of Flatline, and just hearing Moffat kind of explain how Matheson, whenever he has an idea for a story he wants to write, he's a very visual guy. So he always comes with sketches and drawings of what he wants stuff to look like. And Moffat mentioned that for this episode, he came with drawings and sketches of the boneless and saying, this is what I want them to be like. This is what I want them to sound like, to do, to walk like. He basically had it all sketched out ahead of time. But yeah, Jamie Matheson, second episode. First one was the Mummy on the Orient Express.
So we've been talking a little bit in past episodes. It seems to keep coming up. And we had the thing that happened at the end of last episode where basically Clara lies to Danny on the phone, tells him that, you know, she's done traveling with the Doctor, but then she lies to the Doctor and says that Danny's okay with her traveling with him. So she's basically keeping the secret from both of them that she's really not supposed to be traveling with him anymore. And then right at the top of the episode, we get a mention of Danny. Basically, the doctor says, you know, you can leave that stuff here. And she's like, oh, you know, Danny's kind of weird about that. Like, he doesn't want me leaving anything here, but he's okay with me traveling with you. So what did you think about kind of that line, like stuff that we've been talking about for a while now, the continuing drama of Danny Pink and his girlfriend running away with another man?
Even when he never shows up on screen, you still have this feeling of just being bummed out for the guy. His girlfriend is on the TARDIS traveling with the doctor and lying to him that she's not on the TARDIS traveling with the doctor, even to the point where she tells the doctor, okay, you're dropping me off not a second after we left, right? And that's kind of what sets up some of the tension in the start of the episode, because they get out of the TARDIS and they're not where they're supposed to be. Yeah, I feel bummed out for the guy. Still think he's a pretty cool guy. I mean, he can do front flips over robots. I mean, that's a pretty legit skill right there. Boyfriend material, if you ask me. Not that I know anything about that whatsoever. But here Clara is running around behind his back, leaving toothbrushes places, but I guess she's picking them up and taking them back just to hide. She's doing a lot of running. She wanted to stop doing the running, but she's having to do a lot of hiding.
Well, we get another kind of mention of it later on in the episode with a confrontation she has with the doctor, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But kind of the beginning of this episode, we have, you know, that scene. She's about to leave, I guess, the TARDIS to go meet back up with Danny, but then she notices something weird about the TARDIS. The door is now smaller, and now we have this whole issue with that kind of is a running thing throughout the episode, that something's wrong with the TARDIS, and it's shrinking, which is something that we've seen in these set pictures that have leaked ever since, you know, before the season even started. We've seen these images of the shrinking TARDIS, and I think at one point we had thought maybe it was kind of tied in with the whole idea that the doctor was going to be going inside the Dalek and stuff, because we had shrinking in that one as well, but it's a completely different episode. This, you know, I know you had kind of had some speculations on this stuff. Was this kind of what you expected, or was it a different take on it?
Not at all what I expected. The shrinking of the TARDIS, the doctor getting stuck in the TARDIS because it's shrinking. I did like how it was, for lack of a better way of saying it, it was still bigger on the inside. That's everything in the TARDIS, inside the TARDIS, remained the same, but the exterior was shrinking. And I would be hard-pressed to say if anybody was expecting the cause of the TARDIS shrinking to be what the cause was. It was so far out there. It was so fringe. It has never happened before. And even to the point where the doctor says, let me enjoy this. This is something I don't know. And that doesn't happen all that often. It was really far out there, but I enjoyed it. It wasn't anything that it was like, oh, here we go again. Another hokey shrink the TARDIS type of thing. It was really good.
Yeah, it was definitely a unique situation. It was a kind of a plot device. It seemed like, you know, the idea of this episode is that the doctor and Clara are going to get separated, you know, to see kind of what she would do without the help of the doctor. So it was an interesting way to separate them. Kind of like back when we were watching the Hartnell stuff, and it seemed like there was always the story element that they couldn't get back into the TARDIS. You know, that was just the recurring, you know, idea. This is a kind of a similar idea that, you know, something goes wrong and now she does not have the help of the doctor. So she, you know, it was kind of interesting to see what she would do without that help. And the doctor doesn't take it too seriously at the beginning. He's kind of just like, oh, this is interesting. You know, I'm, you know, enjoying this moment, like you said, but pretty quickly he starts to freak out, I think, because he's not used to something like this happening and he doesn't really know what to do about it.
Yeah, how did you accept the little door, doctor's face pressed up against the door, hand sticking out? How did that strike you?
It was funny. The thing It did look a little like the effect.
He looked flat.
Looked wrong. Yeah, it didn't look good. And which is kind of surprising. I mean, I think the budget to this show seems to have gotten to the point where they can do some pretty good effects. But yeah, that something about the way they did the effect kind of took you out of it. It just didn't look right.
Yeah,
especially when it was his hand, it wasn't too bad because the hand was coming out. But the scene where his face was kind of pressed up against it, that was where it really stood out to me as being a bad effect.
Yeah, the hands, I could accept it, like you said. The face looked kind of like how you would have a TV screen in an opening. And it was like it was the screen that was being recorded as opposed to his actual face. I don't know
how they did.
Yeah, probably. They probably just green screened the face in there. But it seemed kind of flat, kind of unnatural. I was hoping that they wouldn't keep showing his face sticking out of the TARDIS door.
I was even unimpressed by the look of the smaller TARDIS, especially when it got to its smallest form. But it didn't look like a lot of care was made or a lot of care was put into crafting it to look like the actual TARDIS. By the time it got to its smallest form, it just looked like a little painted model. Did that stick out to you at all, or did you not even think about it?
It did stick out to me. I was kind of playing with the notion in my mind that the chameleon circuit had just enough power left in it to know that it was shrinking in size and to make it look like something that would be appropriate for that size.
I like that explanation, actually.
Yeah,
it was purposely looking like a toy.
I'm going with that explanation, but along the lines of what you said, I would say that they probably didn't spend that much time on it, and it was just one of those things that it was just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, and so the Doctor is confused about what's going on. He says, hey, I'm going to get back into the TARDIS, but maybe you shouldn't get him back there with me to Clara. So Clara just says like, oh, okay, I'm going to go see what I can figure out, and just walks away, which I was like, okay, I don't know what she thought she was going to find. Of course, she does end up finding something because that's the way stories are told, but it just seemed kind of a weird way for her to just kind of wander off.
And wander off with the... Did she... No, that's later.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say wander off with the... When did she wander off?
Well, at the very beginning, when it's starting to shrink, so it's still big enough for him to, you know, it's like doghouse size. He can still get back in. He tells her not to get back in, so then she says, well, let me go see what I can figure out. I don't know what the exact line was. And then she just walks away. And that's when she runs into Rigsy.
Rigsy.
Right.
And that's when she squats at the memorial.
Right. Before she goes back and finds the tiny TARDIS, which she then puts in her purse.
Okay. Gotcha. So I jumped pretty far ahead. My bad.
So, so she meets Rigsy. So we get this new character. Seems to be a recurring theme in the season now. We have kind of these young... I don't know if he would... I guess you could say troubled in a way. Although not quite as abrasive as the last young character that we had, in my opinion. But still kind of that... I don't know how to explain it. A little bit of an annoying type of young character, in my opinion.
He has needs. He
was nice. He was very polite. And he seemed to be much more helpful than... I can't even remember the name of the girl now.
Courtney,
yeah. He seemed to be much more helpful than Courtney. There was something about him that was off-putting to me, and I don't think it was the character more than maybe the actor. Because it's... To me, his acting was pretty bad. He didn't seem to be a very talented actor, but the character made sense to me. I actually kind of like the idea of what the character was supposed to be, but maybe if they had found a little bit more of an engaging actor.
I wouldn't say that I was off put by the actor. It definitely seemed, and this is really odd to be saying, it definitely seemed off balance with Clara. I wouldn't say that Clara is like the strongest actress out there. Jenna Coleman isn't the strongest actress out there. I mean, she does a good job. She really does. But it just seemed kind of off balance. He wasn't the strongest character to be playing that role. That being said, I did enjoy his character. Like you said, he served a purpose. I could have told you what he was going to be doing by like 5 minutes after we met him. 5 minutes after we found out what was happening, and then saying, okay, he's a graffiti artist. That makes sense. He's doing time, all this other stuff. It kind of just foreshadowed what he was going to end up doing later on in the episode. It was an interesting character to have in there. Clara pretending to be the doctor. She has the psychic paper, the sonic screwdriver. Every doctor needs a companion. He just happened to fall in her lap. So literally, at one point in time.
If he was a companion, then he would be in the running for worst companion, in my opinion.
Oh, come on.
maybe not as bad as Susan.
I was going to say, we've had some good ones out there.
Yeah, as far as side characters go, you know, we've had a number of characters introduced into Doctor Who, kind of just one-offs, or maybe they'll, you know, might show back up, like somebody like Craig. This is one that he was just weak to me. Like I said, the idea of the character, I liked. The actual actor they chose to play him, I felt was very weak. I hope he's not a recurring character that will show up in the TARDIS at some point, or, you know, show back up at all.
I don't feel he's coming back at any point in time. I think he's a one and done. I think he's this episode's Journey Blue.
Journey Blue is better than him. I don't know. I could see Journey Blue coming back.
I think she was there just to serve a purpose. I mean, that's a completely different episode.
Yeah, sure. But you had mentioned the fact that Clara was kind of playing the role of the doctor. She even called herself the doctor, which I thought was pretty funny. The doctor's reaction to that when he asked her name and she was like, I'm the doctor. And he was like, don't you dare. that was pretty funny. And then I like how she made the line. What was it? Something about, I call myself the doctor because it makes me sound important.
Yes.
Kind of a nice dig at him. That was pretty good too.
I did like that. It made me chuckle when she said that, because she knew he was listening. She knew that he could hear everything that she said. And that's one thing that has started to show up more and more, is the playful banter between Clara and the doctor. It's no longer the harsh jabs of trying to figure out who each other really are, like in the first episode where they were both going back and forth about how big of an egomaniac the other one was. We're no longer at that stage where they're at each other's throats or still nitpicking and trying to figure out who each other are. They're now at the stage where they're back to playful, playful digs here and there, jabs taken, but they know each other a little bit more. So yeah, I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
So Clara, like we were saying, she wanders off, she meets Rigsy, and then she does actually find some information. She finds, out about these people that are disappearing, and they're trying to figure out what the connection to it is. And it pretty much comes out that there is these aliens, I guess, or, you know, creatures from another dimension that are coming into our dimension, and they only know how to present themselves as 2D, like flat images, at least initially. Which is a very interesting idea for a bad guy. When they were kind of starting to figure this out or starting to reveal what these villains were, how did you feel about that?
I found it very interesting. There's a book from like 1884 that's called Flatland. And it's this huge discussion of a two-dimensional square and a three-dimensional sphere comes. There's all these dimensions. There's a land of one dimensions, land of two dimensions. And the two-dimension square thinks he knows everything, but then a three-dimension shows up and all this other stuff. Well, I immediately, like, this came to my mind because somewhere along the lines, the three-dimensional sphere explains to the two-dimensional square that there's other dimensions above the two-dimensional, and the two-dimensional goes to the three-dimensional and is just blown away because it's completely different, or the thoughts of the three-dimensional is completely blown away. So, long story short, as I'm watching Flatland is in my mind, and I'm thinking about, like, all these two-dimensional creatures now rising up against the three-dimensional world. I thought it was a really cool idea, just based on kind of that background alone, that this other dimension where things are completely different, where life is completely flat and things are recognized differently, they find out about a third dimension and they're ready to take it on. And it was pretty sweet when you started to pick up on the different things left around the apartments of the missing people. What were your thoughts after my random rant?
Well, I think that we kind of have a theme this season, and it seems to be scary stories. And this one was kind of, this one had elements of, you know, scariness as well. The fact that these things were, you know, kind of in the walls, or, you know, could travel through the walls and, you know, kind of across the floor. And then once they made contact with a human, they basically took that human into this, you know, their own dimension and flattened them out and essentially killed them. Which was pretty creepy. Like that poor police officer woman, that was in the apartment that they were looking, you know, they're kind of searching for evidence, you know, she got pulled right into the floor, like into the carpet. And, yeah, I mean, it was scary. And then, you know, you have the scene with Clara and Rigsby, where they're, you know, kind of trying to stay off the floor, away from the walls. So they have the convenient little, you know,
hanging chair
that they're getting in, which they, you know, use a sonic to break the window, which I thought was kind of weird. I didn't know sonics could break windows. But
I guess sound frequency, scream loud enough, the window will break.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense. So, yeah, they go flying out the window while she's on the phone with Danny, which, you know, we have him, you know, he gets the, or he calls her, I think, right?
Poor guy is just sitting on a park bench.
Yeah, he's literally
waiting for her to show up.
Every time you see Danny, he's by himself. He's either sitting on a couch, sitting on a park bench, like, you know, he's never hanging out with friends or, like, you know, whatever most guys would maybe be doing when their girlfriend's away. You know, he's just always by himself, just waiting for her to come back. But, yeah, you have that phone call, which was kind of funny because she's obviously in distress and he's like, is everything okay? Like, are you in danger? And she's like, oh, everything's fine. And then breaks through a window and, you know, there's another guy, you know, there with her, you know, obviously that Danny can hear. So I don't know, if I'm Danny at this point, I'm thinking, okay, this girl is hiding stuff from me.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious at that point. As soon as you hear... Well, you hear Rigsby in the background the entire time, so it's like, okay, she's with someone else, and it's definitely not the old Scottish caretaker. And then the window shatters, and they fall probably like two stories at least. And they weren't on the ground floor. They were up pretty high, but they fly out the window, glass shatters, and then she runs off out of breath. So Danny at that point probably is a little bit concerned.
Yeah. And yeah, so... Yeah, we get that. But yeah, kind of to answer your question, you know, at this point, the, you know, the villains are definitely formidable. And it's definitely a unique idea. So I give them props, the writer, I give them props for kind of coming up with something different. But yeah, they were pretty creepy.
Yeah, so these villains, after they break through the window, they go back and there's this bridge tunnel type thing where the rest of the community service crew is painting and they're getting ready to paint over what has been seen by Rigsby as being a memorial. Now, I kind of thought he painted it, but I guess he didn't. And that's when they realize that they have no idea who painted it. And in fact, those are the two-dimensional characters themselves. And they start coming out of the walls to take more people. So everybody flees, run into a warehouse, what have you. And then a really interesting discussion takes place between Clara and the doctor. Actually, quite a few different discussions take place between Clara and the doctor at that point. The first one I wanted to ask about was the doctor's approach to what these things were. Did you... He kind of approached it that they might just be trying to figure things out. What did you think about... That's a very Matt Smith approach to who the monsters are. What did you think of that?
I did see it to be a little out of character for Peter Capaldi's doctor, that he was concerned with, you know, making sure that they're not, you know, misunderstood. You know, so far in the season, it seems like he's kind of shoot first and ask questions later kind of doctor. But this was kind of the first time we've seen him actually want to show compassion first, which changes later in the episode. But his initial reaction was, hey, maybe they're just misunderstood. You know, maybe they're just trying to communicate with us. Maybe they don't understand that they're hurting people. So that was a little bit out of character, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting, the way that he approached it. The idea, like you said, they might not know that they're hurting us by dissecting us. there are a couple.
The screams didn't settle. The screams didn't tip him off.
Yeah, exactly. The screams meant nothing. But he mentioned the creatures that had like 97 stomachs, and they say hello by disemboweling
Gross.
Each other.
Gross.
He had quite a few different examples in there, which I thought were comical. The one thing that I kept on going back to, though, is that it did seem out of character, at least from what we've seen of the Doctor at first glance. But then we do have episodes of Kill the Moon, where he's the one that's kind of, although he didn't make the decision of pushing for, we just can't nuke whatever's inside the moon. We just can't do that no matter what. So I'm wondering if there's a little bit more. He has a crusty exterior, but there definitely seems like there's a little bit more on the inside that at first glance isn't noticeable, but I think it's coming out more and more.
Yeah, I think so. Although this was a little different of a situation, I would say, than the chicken and the egg, you know, because that was kind of an innocent life that hadn't really done anything yet, you know?
Yeah, these are ripping people's nervous systems out and throwing them on the wall.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different, but yeah, I can see what you're saying. But this did seem like a kind of a big leap for this doctor to kind of jump to this compassion. But, you know, like I said, kind of later in the episode, it doesn't really matter. But maybe he was just pretending at this point.
Yeah.
You know, he already knew what he was going to do to these people, but he was just like, oh yeah, maybe they're nice. You know, just trying to pretend that he's thinking that first.
So, which brings up another, the doctor pretending or trying to talk to other people and convince them of something brings up the other conversation that took place between Claire and the doctor. So walking into the warehouse initially, everybody's freaking out. There's one guy who's super vocal, who's super negative, who was the, I guess, foreman of the community service crew, what have you. The doctor tells Clara, something's going to get out of hand here real quick. A leader needs to come out, and it needs to be you. So Clara jumps in the middle there, and she, the conversation between the one angry guy and her, where he's like, who are you? And she whispers in his ear that she might be the only chance he has at surviving. But then the doctor asks her what she's going to do. And she says that she's going to do what the doctor does and lie. What did you think about that?
Lie to them. Give them hope. That's what you do, right? Yeah, that was a really interesting conversation, because it was kind of like the doctor was coaching her on how to be the doctor. You know, like, hey, this is a situation that's about to lose control. You need to take control. That's what the doctor would do if he was there.
Yeah.
And she did something very much like the doctor would do, and say a very confident thing to somebody. Hey, I'm the only chance you have of survival. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this interaction, and just her awareness of, you know, when he says, what are you going to do? And she says, I'm going to lie to them. And give them hope. You know, she's calling out the things that he does, but she's also aware of that's what works.
Yeah, she's definitely picked up on some key characteristics of the doctor. He's had a pretty big impact on her for her to be able to pick up on those things. Even Matt Smith would do the same. He never really had a clue what was going on when his doctor never really had a clue of what was going on, but yet he would always give hope in those situations, and then everything would end up working out. So I really enjoyed that, because it even looked like it had an impact on the doctor when she said that. Like, he kind of just paused and was like, wow, she actually does get it, or she actually did understand, or she does understand what I do.
Yeah, and this episode had a lot of great moments, I would say, in the dialogue. So, you know, props to the writer, again, not only with coming up with kind of a unique villain, but also just some of the dialogue that he gave the characters was memorable.
Yeah.
And kind of, we'll kind of get to some of that toward the end as well. But what did you think about kind of the explanation as to what was happening to the TARDIS? That these aliens were just, I guess, leeching the TARDIS's power. I never really made the connection as to like why that was happening. Was it how they were kind of getting from their dimension to ours? Is that what was leeching the power?
Yeah, and I think every time they took a three-dimensional shape or something in the third dimension and sucked it into the second dimension. But then they were also working on becoming three dimensions themselves, which is what essentially happens next. So I think just all the dimension stuff is what was sucking the dimension stuff from the TARDIS and made the TARDIS shrink because right. It's in the dimension. And so it got smaller.
Which puts the Doctor in a very, unique situation that I don't think we've ever seen before, at least not that I can remember, that the Doctor has to basically, the TARDIS is getting to the point where it's running out of power. He can't do anything to save the TARDIS or to really save himself. And then because of, because of what happens in the train hitting the TARDIS and all of that stuff, he has to put the TARDIS into what he called siege mode, which meant it was kind of a last resort. No one can get in, no one can get out. And he doesn't have enough power to really get it out of siege mode. So his fate essentially is sealed. he's going to be stuck in the TARDIS and, it seemed like, it's losing life support and that's the end of the Doctor and the end of the TARDIS. Kind of a unique situation in Doctor Who. I thought it was cool that they kind of showed us what would happen if it got to these dire type of situations.
Yeah. And was it here where the Doctor was like, I'm a Time Lord. Dimensions are kind of our things.
I should figure this out.
Yeah.
Why can't I figure this out? Yeah.
Yeah. But watching the TARDIS get thrown into siege mode where it's just that little Rubik's cube looking thing.
That looks cool. I want that.
Yeah. It really did look cool. That would make something really nice to have on the desk.
Yeah. I want that as a collectible. They need to make the siege mode TARDIS that I can
I'm sure it will be out there at some point. I wonder though if every TARDIS, when it goes into siege mode, if it's blue.
Yeah. I did notice they kept the blue look to it, which, obviously a police box is blue, but, the original TARDIS, from what I can tell, was just like a silver looking craft.
Right.
From stuff they've shown before. So yeah, the fact that they kept that blue tint to it was a nice touch. It looks cool, blue.
Yeah, I liked it. It was pretty interesting though to have the Doctor stuck inside the TARDIS and life support is failing. And at one point he does his whole call out because he doesn't know if anybody could hear him, but he wanted to let Clara know that she made a great Doctor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's up to Clara really at this point to save the day. The Doctor really can't do anything else. And that's kind of been, it seems like the theme of this episode, they got separated and Clara is kind of on her own.
And she tries with the train. She's running away from things with other people. Rixie tries to sacrifice himself and she pulls him out of there.
Which was such a pointless scene, I thought. it just didn't work for me. Rixie, he's trying to save the day, trying to be the hero. It just didn't make sense to me. What was he... They hadn't established enough about that character to make me believe he would do something like that.
Or even to make you care.
Right. Yeah. It was kind of just
quite
like,
honestly. Yeah. It's like, okay, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Let's
go for it. Ram it.
But yeah, so she comes up with this idea, which they don't really reveal to us right away. But we find out that basically she gets Rixie, I can't get this name right, to paint a door.
She commissions artwork
to paint a door to match what the door looked like, where, kind of basically the bad guys earlier had been able to flatten like the knob of a door. And so we have the scene where they were going to, try to get through the door. So they're using their energy to like reanimate the turn thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But because she had put this picture up that Rixie had painted, they were tricked into thinking it was a door. It was actually not. And they were actually giving energy to the TARDIS, which she had set on the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
Which surprised me. I didn't see that coming. I actually didn't pick up on it until they did the whole scene where the image or the picture started to fold over and show that it was the poster. So they tricked me. I don't know. Did it get you, or did you kind of know right what they were about to do?
Yeah, I kind of figured it would. Once you saw them starting to flatten things, I figured, okay, we have a graffiti artist who I don't know, generally should be pretty good at making stuff. He's going to have to paint a picture at some point or spray a picture at some point that comes into play. So as soon as she laid down the poster and he pulled out the cans, I was expecting him to like do a full size TARDIS or something. I wasn't expecting the door. So that did surprise me, but I wasn't too surprised to see Riggsy come into play with his spray cans and painting something. But yeah, given the TARDIS power, the dimensional energy as they try to unflatten the not real door, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, he's pretty good artist. I mean, I was kind of thinking of him as this kind of like, you know, just a graffiti artist, knows how to draw his name on a wall. But apparently he's got some talent, you know, shading, and, you know, he can do a pretty good rust effect apparently and really mimic a door, because it looked exactly like the door looked. Maybe a little hard to believe that he could do something like that, that fast in that short a period of time with maybe limited paint supplies. But it worked.
He's good at mixing.
Yeah. But yeah, so they do, you know, they power up the TARDIS. The Doctor gets back. He's now suddenly confident. And we get this kind of, I'm going to say it's the first time that we get a Capaldi, you know, Doctor monologue. You know, it seems like the past Doctors have had their moments. I know Smith especially had, you know, his moment in the 11th hour on the top of the roof of the hospital, you know, where he's basically telling them, "I'm the Doctor, run," you know?
Yeah.
And then you have the moment, the Pandorica episodes where he, you know, he stands on top of the, of there, and they have like all the different aliens up in the sky, and he's, you know.
Intro.
Yeah, our intro. "I am talking."
Yes.
You know, so you have that awesome monologue, which I think is my favorite. But yeah, you kind of get this moment, you know, what does he say? "I'm the man that stops the monsters."
Yeah.
"I gave you your chance. I tried to talk to you." I got some goosebumps. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. I would say that this is the first legitimate monologue that we have from the Doctor. He said he's always the one that talks, but this is the first like heroic speech, the first declaration that he makes on a big scale before he blows the boneless away. And it is, in fact, when he gives them their name. So up till this point, they have no name. They're just the two-dimensional creatures that are pretty darn scary looking when they become 3D. But yeah, the Doctor had a pretty wicked awesome speech there.
They were like, they look like video games gone bad.
Yeah, they're like zombie glitches.
Yeah. But so since he named them, now we have a name for them. You know, it seems like all recurring villains have, you know, names. Do you think we're going to see the boneless again?
I kind of had the same thought. What's the point of naming if it's not going to be something that sticks around? I have a hunch that they'll be shown back up, especially when it's like there are five creatures from a different dimension altogether. I'm sure that they're not the only five creatures from that dimension. So I think we'll be seeing something like them showing up again. I don't know if they're going to be, I don't know. Should we even start that discussion? Are they the next Weeping Angel?
No, I think that they left the door open with the hope that maybe this episode would be a big hit. You know, people would really, you know, be creeped out by it, and there'd be a lot of, you know, people talking about, oh yeah, the boneless is awesome. You know, if they get that kind of reaction from fans, which I don't think is the reaction that I've heard so far, then maybe, you know, they at least left the door open to bring them back. But
they didn't give me a real life thing to be afraid of. Like, the Weeping Angels gave me every statue I walk by, I need to keep an eye on.
Well, every
the
boneless, painting you walk by.
Nah, I'm not going to be looking at every painting I walk by unless I start seeing, like, paintings of people turned around on walls randomly. Then I'll start to question, but I haven't ever seen one of those yet.
So. There's potential. I see potential. I know kind of with the Weeping Angels, they actually, you know, they evolved as the show went on, you know, kind of what, how they operated, kind of changed, and became, you know, even more menacing. So I think that maybe with a character like this, like the Boneless, maybe they'll come back, but they'll have a little bit different abilities. Maybe they'll actually be able to, you know, kind of represent themselves as anyone, you know, as opposed to being kind of an obvious scary thing that's kind of glitchy. You know, maybe they will come back and they'll actually be able to completely represent a human. That would be even more scary, you know, because then you wouldn't know they're there. So I could see them maybe bringing this idea back, but I'm not expecting to see it anytime soon.
Yeah, I would say we're not going to see it again this season.
Yeah.
The season's going to end without having them appear.
So there's two other things I wanted to mention before we wrap up. But the line at the end with the doctor, Clara is kind of talking to him like, yeah, I did a pretty good job, didn't I? And she kept, you know, she's trying to get approval from him. And then finally he says the line, goodness had nothing to do with it.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting, kind of the way he said it. And then she kind of looks at him weird, almost implying that you can be a successful, you can be successful at being the doctor without actually necessarily being a good person, is how I read it.
Yeah.
How did you, what did you think?
I think that they've done an incredible job this season of showing us the doctor making decisions where, and I think they even said it in the in one of the episodes, where there's no good answer or no good direction to go. There's no good choices to make with the decisions that he has to make. And so when he's saying you were great, but goodness has nothing to do with it, I think he's starting to realize that, number one, he's had a greater impact on Clara than what he's realized. He's changed Clara. Clara is, I mean, she's falling for the same addiction that the doctor has of being the one in charge, the one who can do it, the one who's always in the middle of everything, the one that's making decisions. And then number two, I think he's trying to get Clara to understand that you are going to have to make some stinking hard decisions. And yeah, you might have a pleasant outcome, but that doesn't mean that it was a great thing all around. Bad stuff still happens. And it's kind of the one character, the one angry man, I don't even know his name, but where he's like, you have to let the bushes burn to save the great trees. It's that kind of approach. That's essentially what the doctor does at times, although it makes him sick that he has to do it.
Yeah. That old man was a jerk.
That old man was a jerk. I was really hoping that he would get sucked in at some point.
Yeah, we didn't really get to talk about him too much, but yeah, it was sad to see all the other members of their crew die, and then the one that survives is this, you know, curmudgeon-y old man that basically had nothing positive to say.
Yeah.
And really had no redeeming qualities, which the doctor even says at the end, you know, sometimes the wrong people survive.
Yeah. And as the guy walks away, thanks. No,
yeah,
really.
He said, no, really, thanks. You know, he did say thanks, but still kind of a jerk. But
doesn't make it.
Yeah. So then the other thing I wanted to mention, we do get an appearance of Missy.
Missy's back.
And she has an interesting line because she's looking at Clara and she says, "My Clara, I have chosen well."
Yes.
What does that mean?
So we've also had a couple references to the doctor talking about how some random woman called on the phone and gave Clara his number. And that's how they were brought together in the first place, was some random person gave Clara her number. Or his number. So I think in one sense, Missy just confirmed that she was that mysterious voice at the beginning of Clara's tenure with the Doctor. On the other hand, as far as what she means by "I chose you well," what did she choose her for? I have no idea, but I have a sneaking suspicion it has to do with death in heaven.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like so far everybody that's met Missy has died to meet her. They've been dying to meet her. But so, you know, in my mind, it's kind of an indication that maybe Clara, you know, ends up dying at some point, and that's how she meets Missy. And then, you know, that's maybe what leads into why the Doctor has to go meet Missy. I don't know, but I can see there being some connection there, you know, with all these rumors that Jenna Coleman's leaving at the end of the season. Maybe, you know, maybe she does die.
I could completely see that. In fact, I could completely see that being the time when Danny jumps on the TARDIS, ends up in the last two episodes, and then he gives himself so Clara can find her way out of Missy's trap. Hmm. Both of them die last two episodes.
So, all right, so what did you think? You know, this episode, was it an improvement from James Matheson's last episode, which was Mummy on the Orient Express? Was this better, just as good?
I wanted to ask the same question, because with both these episodes being back to back, which one would you say is better? Are we going to play the game that you asked me first, so I have to go first?
No, I'll answer first.
Go for it.
I still think that Mummy on the Orient Express was a better episode for me personally. This was one of the ones I had to watch a couple times to really appreciate it. There were definitely elements of this episode I really liked. I really liked the dialogue. I liked the, you know, the unique villain that we got. I did not like a lot of the side characters. Rigsby or whatever his name is, you know, the painter kid, didn't love, you know, the choice of the actor for that one. Just the way the character looked, as far as like his style and like the hat and all that, it just wasn't working for me. And then also just the other side characters that they had, like the old man and stuff like that. Just that side of it, I wasn't as big of a fan of. The story was interesting. The TARDIS having to go into siege mode was really cool. Like, you know, the Doctor having his little monologue at the end, I really liked. So there was some strong moments in this episode, but I still think I liked Mummy a little bit better.
I'm gonna flip it around, and I'm gonna say that I liked this one better than the Mummy on the Orient Express. I really enjoyed the Mummy on the Orient Express. I think this was, for me at least, all around better episode. Now, the one thing that I have to say is that for me, this one built on the Mummy on the Orient Express. So if the episodes were flipped in how they were played and how they showed, I would probably go that the Mummy was the better episode. But there was something about this one kind of building on what we already saw, just the dynamics between the Doctor and Clara alone won me over. I would say that this was my favorite episode for James Matheson. And as far as overall in the season, I would say that this is probably in my top half of the episodes, top four episodes of the season, probably.
Cool. Well, next episode we get Danny Pink back. Looks like we got some more bratty kids. So
yes, we have not only just a bratty kid, we have an entire school.
Nice.
Entire class.
Based on the previews I've seen, it looks like it's something about you know, they're in London, but the trees are starting to overtake London. And there's a lot of kids running around. So there's nothing so far in the episode other than maybe the appearance of Danny Pink getting some more screen time. I'm looking forward to that. But beyond that, the story, at least from the preview, doesn't jump out to me as something that's going to be extremely exciting. Sometimes you can't really tell by a trailer, but this one doesn't look super exciting for me.
Yeah, it looks somewhat like I Am Legend meets Little Red Riding Hood meets lots of trees and bushes.
Meets lots of trees and bushes.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they showed the picture of an animal in the cage, and the cage is like overrun with plants. So yeah, it looks like modern day London, which, I mean, even the GPS is saying that, modern day London, but something has happened to make the plants go crazy. And outside of that, like you said, we have no idea what's going on. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
And we have this last episode and then the big two-part finale, right?
Yeah, we are down to three episodes. We are almost there. And then we're going to have, I guess not all that long, a month and a half before the Christmas special.
And then back to William Hartnell.
And then back to old Billy Hartnell.
Well, yeah, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you for listening to this episode of Bad Wolf Radio. As usual, you can leave us a review on iTunes. If you enjoy listening to our show, we'd love for you to go over there, leave us a nice 5-star review, help other Doctor Who fans to find our little podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bad Wolf Podcast. We'd love for you to interact with us over there. Facebook, Bad Wolf Radio, search for us, and we are the one with the black and white logo. We're not that other one that hasn't published an episode since 2005. And you can just send us feedback, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. And until next time.
Later days.
Are you ready?
Let's do this. Throw down the bass.
It's all about that bass, about the bass.
Ah, no treble.
No treble.
I'm bringing booty back.
And we have our blooper at the end.
Heck no.
Heck no. Are you putting the axe on that one? You won't let me post that one?
I don't care. Bidi, bidi, bidi.
I'm going to. All right.